Welcome to Midland Classical Academy's Good Night Dad podcast. Our promise is to partner with parents to develop Christ-like leaders. Now here are your hosts, General Eccles and Brandon Schumann.
Welcome again to the Good Night Dad podcast. Today is episode 4. I'm General Eccles, joined by Brandon Schumann again. Hey, Brandon.
Hello.
Today, we are going to get into classical education. Lee and I, our family's been involved at Midland Classical education process for 12 years now. I'm still, honestly, would have a hard time really explaining it, selling it in a sense as far as going into any depth about it, but we've greatly benefited from it. Brandon's going to be doing most of the talking today. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to classical education. So Brandon, tell us about classical education.
Well, it's interesting that you said that you've been involved with classical education for 12 years. I like to think of it as MCA is an education in education. It's not just for the students, it's for the parents. And the way we operate with classical education at Midland Classical is it is supposed to involve the entire family. It's not only, well, my kids are doing this, and then I pick them up at the end of the day, and then we do everything else with life. This is an integrated thing. And so as parents, we want to partner with you and expect our parents to be very much a part of what's going on with their children's education.
What's unique about classical education?
Classical education has three components to it. It has a classical approach, has a classical curriculum, and we teach through an active learning environment. That's really emphasized. And at the upper school, that looks like the Socratic method.
Let's start with the classical approach. What exactly is that?
Classical approach, what we're doing is we are not so much interested in subject matter as we are with teaching students how to learn for themselves. As a classical model, we follow what's called the trivium. If you've spent much time at MCA, you have probably heard this term before, the trivium. And even if it's new to you, it's the process of how anybody learns anything. And what the trivium is it breaks subjects down into stages of learning. And those three stages are grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Tracy Marshall, who helped found the grammar school, mentioned this to me a couple of weeks ago about what the grammar phase, what you're learning is you're learning the what. In the logic phase, you're learning the why. And in the rhetoric phase, you're learning the how.
That's good.
What she means by that and what the trivium is trying to do is at the grammar phase, you're learning bits of information, you're learning facts, you're learning just the small, simple ideas. And the trivium is liberal arts. What an art does is it makes something. And what grammar is doing is it's making sense of facts, of information, of ideas. And then you take this to the logic phase, and what the logic phase is doing is it's harmonizing and making sense of one idea with another. What's the relationship between X and Y? Whereas in the grammar phase, you're just trying to understand what is X, what is Y. And then in the rhetoric phase, what you're harmonizing, what you're making is you're making community and you're harmonizing minds to where you have this ability to understand your own thoughts and understand here's how these ideas work and interact. And then you begin engaging with other people and other minds and see what their opinion is and what their take is. And they may have a different take on it than you, but what rhetoric offers us to do is to explain, here's how I see this and what truth is. And then through this conversation and through this dialogue, you can develop the sense of community and relationship. And you're doing all of this through subject matter. That's the main thing that we're focusing on, is how can we develop students' abilities to learn how to think for themselves.
Develop the idea of liberal arts, especially in today's politically charged discussions.
Nothing to do with liberal.
Yeah, liberal might be taken as a positive or a negative.
Yes,
but extreme nonetheless, whichever position. But what are you saying about?
Yeah, this doesn't have anything to do with conservative. It doesn't have anything to do with liberal politics, as you said. So thank you for bringing that out. What liberal arts comes back to is, for the longest time, when people were educated, they were either given a technical education where they're developing a skill set like as a craftsman or as a farmer, or what some people would get would be called the liberal arts, which is here's how to be a free person. And so that's what the liberal arts is trying to create, is as a free person, to where you're not trained in any one specific skill set, but you're able to be adept in whatever conversation or topic or situation you find yourself in. It's a great general education to be able to go plug into whatever your specific skill sets are.
So liberal arts was basically an alternative to what we might call learning a trade.
Yes, and about 100 years ago, through the Industrial Revolution, education changed its focus to what we want to do is we want to produce good factory workers. We want to produce people that are going to be good at these individual skills rather than how can we make people to be good people. And that doesn't mean that if you get a technical education, you can't be a good person, but that's not what the different education philosophies are designed for. And classical education is entirely focused on how can you be a good person regardless of what your job is.
Constantly learning.
The next element of this classical education approach is through the classical curriculum. And that may be something that's the most striking right off the bat is when we learn history, we don't just go back to the beginning of America. We're going all the way back to ancient Greece and Rome. And when we're doing science, we learn the modern science techniques, but we see the development of how did the scientific method grow. And you get the opportunity to kind of recreate some of these scientific experiments. We read a lot of Plato and Aristotle and then work our way through what's called the great books and see the development of thought throughout Western history from the Greeks to the Romans to the early church fathers through the Middle Ages to the Renaissance, Enlightenment, and on and on to the present day. And so we get to see this exchange of ideas. There's a lot of primary source reading. And so we don't focus so much on textbooks in history, although we may use some to help us kind of frame things. We're trying to read the Declaration of Independence. For instance, I'm teaching a government class this semester. We're reading the Magna Carta. We're reading John Locke's Second Treatise of Government. We're reading the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut. We're reading the Mayflower Compact. And trying to extrapolate what are the ideas of what's the very purpose of government. And we're doing that before we get to the Constitution and the Federalist Papers, and that's our opportunity to talk about here's how our government works. But before we even get to that, we're trying to say, what is a government for?
So in classical education, y'all are actually reading those documents where when I was in high school, we read a history book about those documents.
Yes, yes, that's a good way of phrasing it. And so it means it's more work, but it also means that there's a lot more to mine as you're
right.
Looking through that. Another element to classical education is that we try to teach through an active learning environment where we aren't just interested in, again, pouring facts in our students' ears and trying to have them cram for a test of information that they're going to soon forget. As a teacher, even though I love my subjects, I got to be honest. I mean, I have to restudy what it is that I'm about to teach from year to year because I don't remember everything. And if I'm not remembering everything, it's pretty ridiculous for me to expect my students to remember all the facts and information from year to year. I mean, there's some things that I'd like for them to know, and I'll tell them, hey, this is something I want you to be able to remember a year from now. But those are very, very few and far between. So what I'm mostly interested in to have my students learn is learn how to think for themselves, learn how to learn regardless of the subject. We teach through what's called the Socratic method, which is a conversation guided by a tutor where we have some objectives that we're trying to accomplish in the class. It's a process and it's a dialogue. And so Socrates, who developed this method and for which it's named, once said that the unexamined life is not worth living. Well, this is an opportunity for us to examine what are the ins and outs of this subject, what are the ins and outs of who I am, and what's the interconnection or the relationship between this material and the world that God's made and who I am and who God's made me to be, and how can I use this to impact and further his kingdom.
Wow, that sounds a lot different than just learning math or just learning English. It's inspiring. I'd encourage dads, just jumping back just a little bit, talking about the trivium and grammar leads to logic, logic to rhetoric, that's a process. Just want to encourage dads and parents at the grammar school level, especially on maybe those 9-hour home days when you're working on projects and multiple kids, and this is going someplace. And again, back to casting the vision, the role of the dad in the home is to continually cast the vision and reinforce that and help develop it. That, man, encourage your wives, encourage your kids that all this memorization, all this Latin, all the cards and all these systems that are in place, it's so that you can go to this next level and be excellent at that.
I would like to mention too that you can do logic and you can do rhetoric at the grammar level. Just asking a 5-year-old what should have happened in this story. I mean, you can use the story of, say, the grasshopper and the ant, and we're all familiar with that parable, and say, okay, what should the ants have done? Should they have fed the grasshopper? Should they not? A 6-year-old can answer that question. And that's them doing rhetoric because they're having to process through what they remember from the story to try to give a good reason or a good answer for why the ants should or should not have fed the grasshopper.
Just the whole concept of asking the question why is pretty powerful. When I say we, I'm talking about me specifically and in our home. It's easy to get lazy in asking questions, and then lazy questions lead to lazy answers. You might have somebody, a young kid in fourth or fifth grade, that reads a book, and their takeaway is that book stunk or that book was awesome. The logical question or the next step in that is to begin to ask why and help them to develop that level of thought instead of just having an opinion, good, bad, yuck, wonderful.
I'd like to end this episode with just a picture, and I didn't come up with this picture. I'm not sure where it came from. Originality is forgetting where you learned it. This image of a tree. If you think of your child or your student's education process as a tree, you've got the things that you see about the tree just visibly are the trunk and then the branches and then the leaves that are up there. Within classical education, you've got a tree where the roots go down underneath into the soil. You as parents are this soil where your students are being able to derive their nutrients. And if you're following Christ, they're going to get really rich, Christ-like nutrients that they're going to be able to develop and grow from. And if we're not walking with the Lord or we don't have that, they're still going to get whatever nutrients we provide. But at the grammar level, that's where they're really absorbing the facts, the information, and their foundation. And without the roots, without the grammar, the logic and the rhetoric doesn't happen. It's groundless, it's baseless, it's literally rootless, and we're just tumbleweeds.
That's a good picture.
Once students kind of learn those grammar basis, then it develops this trunk, which is the logic. And that supports the tree, that supports everything that it's able to become and flourish and thrive. And then the rhetoric phase are the branches. The most beautiful part of the tree for me is in either the spring or the fall when you see the leaves that are there or the fruit that you're able to pick from it. And that's what the good life is about. That's where literally the rubber meets the road. That's what we're going for. We're going for the fruit. That's what we're interested in. All of this is part of a process where understanding our role as parents is that we're the soil in which our children grow and thrive for a time. And the grammar is the roots, the logic is the trunk, the rhetoric phase is kind of the branches. But then what they do with that is going to be the leaves and the fruit that grows from that. That's an image that helps me kind of think about, okay, where are we in this? And you never leave the grammar, you never leave the logic, even when you're discussing the rhetoric, because without those things, the fruit doesn't happen. That's what we're going for, is we're trying to be good gardeners of growing up our children into fruitful, productive people that live lives that are pleasing to the Lord and fulfilling.
A couple of things that really jump out to me as you're talking, Brandon, is that this is an ongoing process. I'm 45 years old, and it's an ongoing process for me personally, for me as a dad, to my kids. The other thing that really strikes me is that Midland Classical didn't come up with classical education, right?
I mean, no.
Socrates wasn't the name of a family 20 years ago that was involved in coming up with this grand idea for this particular school. This is a method that has stood the test of time, literally centuries. That's the basis for classical education, which is the basis for how Midland Classical chooses to educate. Is that accurate?
Yes, and there's lots of classical schools that are out there all over the country, and there's really this kind of movement or renaissance or classical revival that's taking place, and it looks different in different schools, but that's exciting that some of the cutting edge of recovering what classical education is.
Yeah, that is exciting.
Thank you. If you do enroll your kid or you are sending your children to MCA or maybe you have in the past, thank you for being a part of this revival and this renaissance. It's a very fun endeavor to partner with you in this to raise up kids that love the Lord and will be fruitful and productive in their lives.
Yeah, amen, definitely. And the other thing, back to being able to encourage our wives, especially at the grammar stage, is some of the things that we may not understand as moms on a home day, why are we doing this to this level, to this degree? It's not something that just the administrators at the grammar school came up with. This is something that has a profound basis, and it's been tested through time. And so if you get discouraged at that point, or if your wife gets discouraged, encourage her in that there's a greater vision, there's a greater purpose, and there's greater fruit and results that are based on accomplishing what's been asked of you that day as a mother, as a teacher, and to your students. So just put that idea in your tool belt and use that whenever possible to really encourage your family that this all leads to greater things.
Well, that wraps up today's podcast. And so thank you again for tuning in to the Good Night Dad podcast. And wherever you are, we hope this is a blessing to you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Good Night Dad podcast, brought to you by Midland Classical Academy. Engaging minds, pursuing Christ, discovering greatness.